This is the Business Storytelling Show, a top global marketing podcast listened to in more than 100 countries, live streamed on social media, and broadcast on DBTV. Christoph Trapp chats with industry leaders to help your company tell better business stories. Here's today's episode.
Hey, business storytellers, episode 648. Today we want to talk about authoritative content. What is that? Why do we need it? And does it mean we know everything? Does it mean we're talking down to you? How do we frame that? Very interesting discussion. I'm joined by Chima Meje. She's the senior content marketing strategist over at Moz. You can check them out at moz.com to track your SEO and many other things. Totally oversimplifying things here, but that's one reason why you want to go there. So what is authoritative content? Where's the line to talking down to people? And how do you make it work for your company? Let's find out. Welcome to the show. Blow it up right there for authoritative content. Hey, really glad to see you on the show today. Nice to connect with you. Let's talk about what is authoritative content and why should companies even care?
Okay, so let me break this down from the start. Authoritative content, in my opinion, is content that is written by an expert with deep knowledge about the problem and firsthand experience with solving that problem. Simply put, that is authoritative content, in my opinion. Now, why should you care about authoritative content? Number one, you have AI everywhere. It's become so much easier than ever to put out any type of low quality content out there. You have brands that are publishing 100 content pieces in a month. 90% of it is probably not even good. And it's so easy to fool search engines into thinking that this is good quality content. So when you have so much content out there, people are drowning in all this poor quality content. That means that they are turning more to people that they consider as thought leaders, as experts, as truth tellers for information. And you want your brand to be in there. You want yourself to be in there. That is the first reason why authoritative content is so important. Number two, Google favors authoritative content as a way of counteracting all of the sameness, all of the poor quality content that we're seeing on SERP. They're looking for more thought leaders to platform as sources of truth in any niche. I think another reason why authoritative content is so important is that it helps you to stay top of mind for your target audience so that when you're thinking about a problem that you solve, you are the first person that comes to their mind. And for me, I call that ranking in the mind of the user. It goes beyond ranking on search engines. And this is how you start to drive word of mouth, referrals, and all of all that good stuff that shows you that people really, really like your brand. Finally, it's a great way to get in front of decision makers. A lot of them are consuming content on social media. A lot of them are looking for high quality blogs to get content from. If you establish as a thought leader, they come to trust you and you're the first person that they're looking for when they're looking for solutions. That is why you need to care about thought leadership content in 2024.
You know, what's interesting to me, the whole comment about AI, I use AI all the time. And the one thing I just realized actually last week, perhaps when I was talking with Christopher Penn about this topic a little bit, is that perhaps the way I use AI is not the way a lot of other people use AI, right? I use it to like brainstorm and to enhance and find things. So for example, after the show, I will put this show through Otter AI, and then I will put it into Claude AI, and I will find themes that maybe I didn't catch, because guess what? We're talking to each other. It's a conversation, right? But I'm not using it to create anything from scratch. I'm using it as an enhancement. And you know what Christopher Penn said is that a lot of people, what they're doing is they're literally just going to wherever. We're not going to pick on any AI tool. And they just say, write me an article on authoritative content. So instead of us having a conversation, they just pull it from wherever. So couldn't agree with you more. But let's talk about the whole having knowledge of a topic. How do people get there? I mean, how do you, and who should that be in a company? I mean, should it be the leaders? Should it be somebody else? And how do people get the right knowledge? It's kind of like, you know, when it comes to live streaming, I mean, I have all kinds of knowledge about live streaming because I do it all the time. So maybe people just have to participate and dive in. But what's your take on that?
I think knowledge comes from doing. You can't claim to have knowledge if you haven't done. And I think this is something that also makes content authoritative. You can see it in someone say when they're writing about, let's say they're writing about how to make omelette and they're a chef. And then they are writing and they're giving an example. The first time I made omelette, I made a mistake of this. I made a mistake of that. A tip I discovered in making better omelette is this, 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 you know, that is showing that they have real life expertise in making omelettes, and they've done it so many times that they've now become an expert at making omelettes. And then they could drop that somebody gave a review about their omelette that they like this specific thing about the omelette. Now, this is just using an example of what makes you knowledgeable. The knowledge comes from doing. It comes from making mistakes. It comes from finding things that work. It comes from processes that you have done repeatedly until it becomes a way of life for you. That is what makes you knowledgeable. That is why I'm always very surprised when I see leaders. A lot of the companies that I've reached out to for the podcast we're starting, for example, now, and I say, hey, do you want to jump on the podcast and talk about this case study that you used to win an award? And then they direct me to the person who actually did the work. And the person who did the work is maybe a junior SEO or someone who's a senior SEO, but that person is not even sitting in leadership position. So being a leader doesn't necessarily make you someone who is knowledgeable. You might have different capabilities that make you a leader. Doesn't mean that you are the one with knowledge.
You know, and that, I think that's actually like a mind shift switch in companies, right? I mean, some companies, especially here, Gen Xer or Gen Zennial, I guess, right here, you know, we had spokespeople, right, at companies, right? One person was the spokesperson. So now when you go, hey, can this person come on the podcast to talk about it? Some of the old-time leaders might go, no, I'm the person who talks for the company, but they don't have any clue about what it is. So they have to be briefed. And the other thing, when you have to brief people, guess what? At some point, if you ask a question that's too deep, they can't answer it because they didn't do it. And you can't brief them on every little bitty detail, and they don't really have opinions. So it's very interesting. But how do you know as the audience? So especially with the emergence of AI, I mean, there's so much stuff out there. I liked your comment about some companies just churn out hundreds of articles. I had somebody actually, I don't know if that was on the show or somewhere else, and they said that you have to write all these articles to rank in SEO. And I'm like, I'm not sure I agree. I think you can rank in SEO by writing a couple of good and deep articles. You don't need to just, flood the internet here with crap. But how can the audience tell whether something is truly authoritative or if it's really just remixed from somewhere else?
I think we're dealing with a crisis right now where people don't trust anything. You see it when I go on Instagram and somebody posts a video or something, and people are doubting that the video is real because it could have been made with AI. But people can tell when something is fake. If it's words, for example, I use AI every day. I write with AI every day. That means that when I see it on my table, someone is trying to publish something on the Moz blog, a guest author, just from the first paragraph, I can tell if this content is written with AI or not, because there are specific words that AI tools use when they generate a response. I can tell because I use AI tools. You can also tell because, number one, it will lack personalization. For me, that is always the biggest giveaway, especially with written content. It lacks personalization. It is very, very generic. You see that same advice that this person who is supposed to be an author is giving already being given somewhere else. And that's something that differentiates authoritative content from everyone else. It is unique. It is advice that nobody else is giving based on your own personal experience. And people can tell when it's written with AI or when it's not authoritative or when you're not knowledgeable, because you don't have any knowledge to share. You cannot build on quicksand. You can't build experience on air. When your content is not littered with examples of you solving the problem or of you using your own insights, people can always tell that you're just regurgitating stuff that already exists on the internet. If it's video content, I think it's the same thing with video content. When it's scripted, when it doesn't look natural, people can always tell. We're getting smarter because we're exposed to so much AI content, so much bullshit, if I may use that word. So the more bullshit we're exposed to, the more we become like masters at filtering out the rubbish from the stuff that is true.
You can definitely use that word, but now we can go with the explicit content on the episode and just let it rip if we want to. But that's totally okay. Totally 100% kidding you. Doesn't make any difference, quite frankly. You know, what's interesting, though, is there are some words, unlock, I think, or unleash. I think those two words.
In the world of... In the world of AI, in the world of this, in the world of that, it starts every single other word with a capital letter. It's just instead of saying like instead of going straight to the point, it kind of takes longer to get there and says, Master A is not just this, it is this, you know. It's just some of those small things that I see because I work with AI or because I use AI tools that just tells me that this person did not write this stuff.
And, you know, just to very clarify and be clear on this, me, for example, turning this episode into an article with AI, that's very different than just me writing something from scratch in AI. I'm actually fine with people doing that and just using it to be a little bit quicker. But anyways, let's talk about, I kind of hinted earlier, I'm like, where's that line between being authoritative, which some people might see as dominant, or I'm telling you how it is. This is how you do SEO and don't talk to me about any other ways. So where's that line between authoritative, knowledgeable, and authoritative, dominant or overly bearing, I guess?
Okay. Think about it like a cult leader. That is what I want you to think about it like. What would a cult leader do that makes you feel compelled to, I don't want to say join their cult, but to take action? Like, I always think about this. There's a thin line between cult leadership and thought leadership. So that line you're talking about, that is the line. You can be assertive and show authority. That is thought leadership. You draw from your experience, but you allow people to make decisions for themselves. That's the difference with thought leadership. You present your case, you show your expertise, you use argument, you use supporting data to present a logical case for whatever it is you're presenting. You also leave space for interaction, for people to counteract your argument with their own POV, with their own point of view. That means that even if you've said this thing, you're also open to people having differing opinion. That is thought leadership. Now, that line, where it now becomes like someone who is trying to assert themselves on you, that I like to call cult leadership, is when you are not open to differing opinions. When you say A is A, and you want that to be the absolute truth that not just you, but everyone else must attest to. And then when you start criticizing people for having different opinions from you. So you cannot be dominant as a thought leader. You can be assertive. But people must come to the conclusion by themselves. And you must be okay with people having different opinions from you because nothing is ever really the truth. The truth is subjective. I think that's an opinion that we have to be open to. The truth is subjective. A sometimes can be A and A sometimes can be AB. I'm just giving an example here. So I think that's a fine line that we keep working at as thought leaders because when you see a lot of the people that people call to claim to be thought leaders, sometimes I feel like I call them their followers. Their followers tend to be empty brain because they just go with everything that thought leader has said. That is when you are now delving into cult, in my opinion. But as a genuine thought leader, there is always that room for disagreement. There is always that room for conversations. There is always that room for people to have different opinions so that whatever they come through as the truth, you can influence that, but you cannot make that decision for them. The moment you take that decision making away from them, then it's no longer thought leadership.
I think the one way to kind of get around it too is like the whole you writing. And I actually see that in SEO, and not SEO, but in AI generated content, right? When it's like this, when you do a podcast, you should do this. When you do a live stream, you need to do this, right? So like sometimes those sentences work just as fine if you take the you out and it's not as preachery. Now, when you were talking about like challenging other people's opinions, or that's not the right word you use, but there's a fine line, right? Because I learn a lot from everybody's opinion, whether I agree with the opinion, I like the opinion, or whatever. Like, you know, the whole thing, for example, on LinkedIn, like LinkedIn the comments, and I know Guy Kawasaki did a whole study on that, who knows when, a few years ago. Like, I hate it. I just hate it. Like, I think, you know, like it's people don't go there. Well, whatever, why do I have to link at all? but I still try to learn, right? I'm not challenging Guy because everybody is really doing what he's been talking about back in the day. I'm learning from it. So isn't that part of it? To become a knowledgeable expert, you have to learn from everybody else, whether you like them or not, whether you agree with them.
Of course. You have to listen to people, but just like you said about LinkedIn, if you go to some of these thought leaders now, the ones that have like maybe 100,000, 1 million or so followers, if you look at the comment section, every time they say something, even when what they're saying it doesn't even make sense, you just see people there just agreeing with them. Yes, absolutely, that's spot on. You know, those people have, I don't know. Yeah, it just feels like they've lost the plot and they've stopped thinking for themselves. I would never want to have a comment section that looks like that, or conversations that just look like where people are agreeing with me. I feel like I learn so much from when people disagree with me as much as when people agree with me. Because if you present your argument in a logical manner that tells me where you're coming from, I can learn something from that. So, yeah.
Just share your story. And sometimes I think the thing I've learned over the years too is sometimes I share, I don't want to say my half-baked story, but the story to this point, right? I mean, there was a time when I did a VR video and I haven't even done it, but I was just like, I just bought this camera. Here's what I'm planning on doing. And I wrote an article about it and that was it. And people ate it up, right? And I didn't even share any tips yet. I just said, I'm trying this and here's what I'm trying to do. So it's kind of interesting. So I think part of what I heard you say is exactly that. Share your own stories, be unique, be personal, and then kind of build from there. How do you measure the impact? I mean, I guess some of it could be just, you know, people telling you, but overall, how do you know that it's working or not working?
Okay. I think the first thing you start seeing is that people start searching your name more in search engines. And then you start seeing that your name has like search volume. For me, that's like when I know that it's really working on a big scale, that is the first thing I notice. How many people are searching my name on a month-to-month basis? That means they're thinking about me. That means they are taking the conversation beyond what I've said on social media, on my blog, or something that they've seen me do, and they want to learn more about me. I know it's working. Same thing with brands. When you start seeing more branded searches, and they've been putting out a lot of thought leadership content or a lot of authoritative content, then you know that people are starting to think more about them and they want to learn more about that brand. That's the first one. On social media, I would also say, check out the engagement of the content that you're putting out. Are people interacting with it? And by interaction, I mean like, are they trying to like continue the conversation by comments, by likes, by following you, by continue the conversation on their own page and say, hey, I just heard this thing that this person said. I really liked it. This is what I liked about it. This is what I do. You know, are people sharing something based on the advice that you've given and say, I tried this person's process and this is what it led to. So I think, let me see, is there any other way that I'm leaving out on measuring content? Yeah, I feel like the most part for me is how easy it is for people to think about me and to refer me, because I'm looking at thought leadership personally from the viewpoint of I want people to refer me for work. I want to be top of mind for people. How many people are coming to me and saying, Chima, I saw this stuff that you wrote about this last time. I want you to come and do that for me. That tells me that my content is working. How many people are referring me and saying, hey, Chima, I saw this post somewhere else and you were the first person I thought about. That tells me that whatever it is I'm doing is working. And also, how many people are engaging with my website, my conversion pages like signing up for stuff, buying my courses, signing up to like book a call with me, because the money is the main thing for me at the end of the day. That also tells me that it's working. So just to recap that, I want to measure conversion. I want to measure people that are converting into customers, buying something for me, referring me for work. I want to measure how am I showing up on search engines more frequently for my name. That means people are searching for me. Are people implementing the stuff that I'm doing or the advice that I'm giving? That tells me that, okay, they're taking me seriously. They're actually using the stuff that I'm giving out and it's working for them. And finally, social media engagements.
And, you know, of course, I did look up the numbers here and your searches, 170 searches for your name a month. So certainly whatever it is you're doing, you are doing it well, because people are searching for you. So kind of interesting to see. The other thing, as you were talking, that I was thinking about is, you know, engagement on social media is always kind of an up and down, right? Algorithms, sometimes they favor you, sometimes they don't. But the thing I have noticed, the creators that actually do this well, they make it work on TikTok, on Instagram, on YouTube. They're all different algorithms, so they figure it out. So just think about how to make the algorithms work for you. And of course, on your website, sometimes I think it just comes down to using the correct language or the right words, right? So like if you don't even use the right words for your audience, I mean, people will never, ever find you. I mean, it's just like, you know, I don't know why people don't look into that more deeper and, you know, back into keyword research. It makes no sense to me. I think that's an important part from the get-go. Is authoritative content mostly SEO related, social media, anything else, or where is it most important?
Yeah, I feel like it's a combination of all these things for me. For me now, when I'm doing authoritative content, I'm looking at it from social media like LinkedIn, Twitter. I'm also looking at it from speaking engagements, doing podcasts like this one with you, webinars. You know, for me, it's like how am I putting out the content? Who is engaging with the content? Where is this content going to end up? So most times when I think about authoritative content, yes, a lot of the benefit is for social media, but also a lot of the benefit is to impress the people that will end up becoming customers. So it's twofold. It's impressing social media so that your stuff shows up more frequently when your name is associated with a keyword. And it's also impressing the people that you want to be, you want them to become your customers at the end of the day.
It's always about connecting with the right people. And, you know, sometimes if your content doesn't resonate with some people, maybe they're not your target audience, quite frankly. I think that's
Agreed. I agree with this because the content I put out on LinkedIn, the way I write on LinkedIn is different from the way that I'll probably write on Facebook or the way that I'll probably write on like Instagram or something. So I use language, like what you said, Christoph. I use specific language for different places. Maybe the way I would speak on stage would be different from how I would write on a blog post. But across all of these channels, there's consistency in my language. And I think I want to attract people that like the way I talk, that like what I have to say, that like my personality that you see shining through from the content that I'm putting out. Because those are the people that will probably engage with me, become customers, refer me, and all of that.
You know, I like that actually because, you know, this is who I am. This is how I talk. And there's some things I can do, right? I can turn on some lights. I can put on some powder on my shiny bald head, but that's about it, right? Like I am who I am. So people either like it or they don't. Really appreciate you coming on the show. Very insightful. And the last 30 seconds here, tell us, how do people connect with you? Who should reach out? Where do they connect?
Yeah, you can connect with me on my socials. My name, Chima Meje. I'm more active on LinkedIn and on Twitter. You can also find me on my website, Zenith Copy. I have a course there on how to build thought leadership, or mostly how to build topical authority. So you can get the course. And yeah, you can also find me on the Moz blog. I have some stuff there, lots of initiatives that I have coming out on Moz. So find me on my website, personal website, Zenith Copy. Find me on moz.com. Find me on socials with my name, Chima Meje.
Thanks for tuning in. Please rate and review The Business Storytelling Show on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe so you don't miss the next episode.